Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootniblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos and originator of the Zero-G Draft Strategy. In this podcast, I'm going to go over the most puzzling players league-wide as submitted by the Apples and Genos Discord server. Let's hit it. Welcome, 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 everyone. As you know, we're going to be talking about some puzzling players today, but it was actually kind of a big news day. I don't know if you could say big. It was a decently sized news day in the NHL today. Some updates on some players that Blake and I mentioned in the podcast that we did yesterday. So definitely want to provide you with some of that here. Let's just get right into it. Jared Spurgeon is apparently good to go after that hit. I thought he might be out for a bit, but apparently he's just totally good to go. No problems moving forward. So good to hear for Jared Spurgeon. Mason McTavish is not going to travel with the team on the current two-game road trip. Originally, there was a tweet that said he was. Now he's not. But that is apparently the final word. He's not going to go on the two-game road trip. Earliest he could return is Sunday versus Winnipeg. So you can plan for that. And that does obviously take a bit of a bite out of Anaheim as a team overall, their top power play and that line with Vetrano. Aiden Hill also not going on a road trip. His earliest return would also be Sunday versus San Jose, it sounds like. Some better news, though. Andre Burakovsky has rejoined Seattle's practice and not even wearing a red no-contact sweater, apparently. So seems like he's actually going to be good to go in fairly short order. Obviously, he's going to take some time to get back up to a reasonable level of game shape. But yeah, good to hear that Burakovsky is on his way back. Weird one today. Evgeny Kuznetsov, healthy scratch for a quote-unquote mental reset. Yeah, I don't know what to say about it. It doesn't seem like this was a major issue. There was, I guess, a thing in Saturday night's game I was reading where he was benched for a mistake that he made on the ice by the coach, and now he's getting a game off. Patrick Laine's situation once again, I guess. Kuznetsov has obviously had a bit of a tumultuous relationship with the Capitals over the last year or two, and so you have to wonder if this isn't a harbinger of things to come, if he's going to be with the team long term. But as for now, he's a healthy scratch for this game. We'll see if that affects him moving forward. You would think that if he does want to play his way out of town, he'd be motivated to play pretty well. But in the interim, I guess obviously Dylan Strome becomes more interesting because I would assume he would have a top line, top power play spot all but locked up if Kuznetsov were to move away from the Capitals for whatever reason. Noah Dobson, Brock Nelson both took a maintenance day today in practice. I read the quote from Lane Lambert, and it sounded like he was kind of non-committal on their availability for the game on Tuesday against San Jose. That's a little bit concerning, but we'll have to see, I guess, what the story is on Tuesday and just take it from there. Yeah, it was phrased as a maintenance day, which doesn't sound bad, but then the way that he spoke about it, or at least the quote that I read, seemed like he was not ready to just say, oh yeah, it's a maintenance day, no problem, they're going to be good to go for tomorrow. So yeah, a little bit of conflicting messages there. I'll be watching that pretty closely, obviously. Jacob Markstrom took a puck off the hand underneath the blocker in practice. Don't have an update on that one yet, but obviously you're going to want to watch out for whatever that could mean for the Calgary Flames net situation. Trevor Zegras and Jamie Drysdale apparently were skating in full gear away from the team, not in practice, but at least that's a sign of them getting closer to returning. Still probably weeks away at this point. Sounds like Patrick Kane is likely to debut on Thursday against San Jose. So all you people who grabbed Patrick Kane and held on to him for this long and took up that roster spot while he was labeled NA on Yahoo, you're finally going to be paid off, hopefully. It sounds like Kane is going to go on the top power play unit there, so we'll see what the new situation in Detroit yields for Patrick Kane. I myself am not terribly excited about Patrick Kane in Detroit, but if he's going to get a ton of minutes, then he could walk into some points there for sure. And one other interesting note, not NHL related, but the PWHL, the Professional Women's Hockey League, had its first preseason tilt today. I'm really looking forward to this league. I have a couple of daughters, and yeah, it's just exciting to have the women's game have a national women's league to get her interested in, hopefully my oldest. So I'm excited, looking forward to that. Apparently they're also testing some different rules. Apparently today they're testing one where all minor penalties had to be served in full, so the full 2 minutes, even if a goal was scored. I just think that's pretty cool. Like, you don't have to play the game the exact same way as the NHL. And honestly, the NHL could probably learn a thing or two from that, not being so rigid on some things and being willing to step out of their comfort zone from time to time. We got Toronto Dave in the chat. Hashtag zero G. You know what it is, buddy. Good to see you. I would love to have more comments before I get into the puzzling players here. If you are joining live, if you've got questions, by all means, fill up the comments and I will get to as many as I can as we go through these puzzling players. We're going to start with a pair of Washington Capitals. Alex Ovechkin has been a frequent returnee on this. He's got just 2 assists in his last 5 games, averaging 18 minutes a night over the last little bit. That's not great. I'm going to double check and see if there was just one game where that kind of dragged things down, or if that's a bigger trend overall. Yeah, the last 3 games, his minutes have really come down. Not really sure why that is, to be honest. He still had, in his last 5 games, 3 shots, 5 shots, 2 shots, 5 shots, 1 shot. Yeah, he's got another game here tonight. So if you're listening to this on the podcast on Tuesday, you already know how that game went against Arizona. But overall, I remain relatively unconcerned about Ovechkin on the season. He's still 27th in shots per 60, 16th in shot attempts per 60. The individual scoring chances for, as I mentioned last week, are down. That is a little bit concerning because it seems like that could be some indication of just a different system not fitting Alex Ovechkin very well. And so there is that to worry about, but by the same token, he's 142nd in Corsi 4 per 60 over the last 5, but 48th in scoring chances for over the last 5 games. So all things told, I really think Ovechkin is just getting quite unlucky. He's shooting just 6.4%, on ice shooting percentage just 8.3%. Both of those numbers are bound to regress positively at some point. The bigger concern really is the decreasing ice time in the last 3 games. I can't imagine that Spencer Carberry is just not going to play Alex Ovechkin, one of the greatest goal scorers, if not the greatest goal scorer of all time. I think it's just a, I don't know if it's a motivational tactic or if it's just a short-term thing as he tries some different things within the Washington Capitals lineup, but I cannot imagine that a guy with the name cachet of Alex Ovechkin is going to be held down in the time on ice department. It's more worrisome to think about what he could be doing as he declines inevitably in his older age. I don't really see that too much. The scoring chances for that he's generating are a bit of a concern, but I'm still, like, the shots are still there. He's still doing all that. And so overall, I think he might convert a little bit less than he has in years past. And sure, the team around him might not be quite as good as it was, but I do think there are much better things ahead for Alex Ovechkin. And I would be happily acquiring him right now if people are really starting to get worried about Ovechkin and about the Capitals in general. Dylan's in here and says, comments. Thank you for your comments, Dylan. That's a solid comment. Let's talk about John Carlson, obviously tied to Ovechkin's fortune somewhat. Carlson has 3 assists in his last 5 games, averaging just under 24 minutes a night. Karlsson has been averaging huge minutes for most of the season. And then just this last little bit, you obviously see it come down just a little bit, but still very, very good. 136th in shots per 60 over the last five games, but 18th in individual scoring chances for per 60 amongst defensemen. So, you know, take one with the other. Not a ton of shots, but the shots he is getting are pretty dangerous shots. The on-ice numbers, similar to Ovechkin, 112th in Corsi 4 per 60, 56th in scoring chances 4 per 60. On the season, like, he's only pacing for 4 goals, which is obviously a problem, but 55 points. And so, like, that's pretty solid still. And I do think, like, 56% IPP, I honestly think Karlsson has shown in the past that he's a guy who can sustain a really high IPP. The 8.5% on ice shooting percentage should come up a little bit. I do still think John Karlsson is a 60 plus point defenseman, and definitely the goals are going to come. He's not going to shoot 2.2% on the season. So I do think John Karlsson has another, you know, 10 to 15 goals in him this year yet. And I do think that he's going to get up there beyond the 60-point mark this year pretty comfortably. Once Ovechkin gets rolling, Karlsson will get rolling and vice versa. And so you'll probably see those guys, both of their fortunes, turn for the better as we move forward. Ricky asks, any concern over Vince Dunn, or would you consider his recent output just a cold streak? So we touched on Vince Dunn in the episode that Blake and I did yesterday. So you can go back and check that out for our full thoughts. But basically, to sum it up, I think that Dunn is a little bit concerning. I don't think the point pace that he put up last year or has put up so far this year is likely to continue. I think this is some regression and real regression hitting him, and I do expect it to continue a little bit. He's been getting by on the basis of really high IPP so far, individual points percentage, just kind of the share of the goals that are happening on the ice that he's been a part of, and I do think that that's going to regress fairly significantly. So yeah, I'd probably put him more in like a 55 point range. He's still going to be very rosterable, very useful, but I do think that he's bound for some regression from his heights previously. So take that for what it's worth. But yeah, I do think Dunn is slated for some regression, and you're just kind of seeing it currently. Kyle says fourth. Yes, fourth comment. We can number all the way into infinity throughout the podcast here if we want to. All right, Matthew Tkachuk, also a player that has had a recurring spot in this segment, has one goal, one assist for 2 points in his last five games, averaging just over 17 minutes in the last little bit here. And yeah, the on-ice numbers, the individual numbers, both coming down a little bit here from the previous heights. 103rd in shots per 60, 81st in individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 37th in Corsi 4 per 60, 50th in scoring chances 4 per 60. On the season, still terrific numbers. He's 13th in shots per 60 on the season, 7th in both Corsi 4 and scoring chances 4 per 60 on the season. So I'm not concerned about Matthew Tkachuk. I've said it every single time his name has come up, and I'll continue to say it. I have no concerns about Matthew Tkachuk whatsoever. He's going to score a ton of points this year. I'd still trade Philip Forsberg for him, for example. I think Matthew Tkachuk is more likely than not to be a top 10 fantasy asset rest of season. Cam York, Travis Sanheim. Travis Sanheim and Sean Walker. So it was asked to just kind of break down the Philadelphia defenseman situation that's been going on. We had Travis Sanheim get on the top power play, run that for a while, had a bunch of points, and Sean Walker was there for like the briefest moment in time, and now it's been Cam York, and York seems to be continuing in that role for the last little bit here. So all these guys getting really solid deployment, Cam York and Sean Walker around 22 minutes, and Travis Sanheim up at 25 and a half minutes over the last five games. All of them shooting a fair bit. Cam York 53rd in shots per 60, Sanheim 35th, Sean Walker 38th. York taking the least dangerous of those shots and Walker the most dangerous of those shots. Walker's got the best on-ice numbers, 26th in Corsi 4 per 60, 61st in scoring chances 4 per 60, where Sanheim and York as a defensive pair, as they are lower down, 103rd, 110th in Corsi 4 per 60, 181st, 160th in scoring chances 4 per 60. So all these things put together, I'm really just chasing the power play one deployment here. I know that, as we've said, torts is going to torts, and you probably can't trust it, but this is a bottom of your roster defenseman. I would drop Sanheim for York. Said that in the podcast yesterday as well. I think that you just chase the top power play here. That's where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. Whoever's on that at the current moment is the player that you want to roster. Sean Walker, I think, has shown something legitimate here that he can play and be an offensive contributor, and that's a little bit exciting. He's been named as a potential trade candidate, and he could go somewhere. I've heard the Leafs bandied about, but I also read something that the Leafs weren't particularly interested in him, that they still are focused on Chris Tanev. I don't know. It's all rumors at this point, obviously, and nothing really concrete. But if Sean Walker were to walk, great pun there, unintentionally. If Sean Walker were to walk into a top power play situation, I'd be very, very interested at that point, because he has shown some really good stuff under the hood. And yeah, I just think that he could potentially be a really strong player in the right situation. I don't think he's likely to get an extended look in Philadelphia for whatever reason. He was there for a very brief moment in time before Torts went right back to Cam York, who he's already tried this season. So it seemed like he didn't like what he saw there. So overall, York is who I'm interested in at the moment. I'm really just chasing top power play and willing to cycle through players as they're on that top power play here. Simon says, "Hey Nate, how's it going?" Gustafson, a straight up drop now. That's Erik Gustafson. Yeah. Unfortunately, yes, Erik Gustafson with Adam Fox back. His role goes back to a very small role, on the Rangers. And so I am willing to drop Erik Gustafson right away. All right, let's keep rolling. Jordan Kyrou has 4 assists for 4 points in his last 5 games, averaging just under 17 minutes a game, 76th in shots per 60, 13th in shot attempts per 60, and 20th in individual scoring chances 4 per 60 over the last 5 games, 75th in Corsi 4 per 60, 76th in scoring chances 4 per 60. On the season, Kyrou's pacing for just 14 goals, 54 points. He's still generating a ton of shots on the season, 68. Percent IPP, 5.1% shooting percentage, and 8.7% on ice shooting percentage. I would love to tell you that Kyrie's a massive buy low, but my problem is that with Jake Neighbors emerging currently, and who knows if that's going to sustain for the full season, but it is what's happening right now. That has meant that Kyrie has been on the line with Kevin Hayes and Braden Schenn, and that's just simply not as good a spot for offense as it would be with Buchnevich and Thomas. And more concerningly, Kyrou has also been demoted to the second power play unit. And so that's obviously going to hurt his potential on a team that's already not obviously a offensive powerhouse. So overall, I do think Kyrou is an extremely talented player. I worry now about the deployment now that Neighbors especially is taking off and kind of supplanting him in some ways as a really good complement to what Thomas and Buchnevich do on that line and on the power play. And so that's my total concern with Kyrou. I do think that he deserves better than 68% IPP and an 8.7% on ice shooting percentage. So I do think that you're looking at a guy who can go to, let's say, a 65-point pace on the season, should probably score double basically what he's been able to. So put him in for maybe 30 goals, 65 points is what I'd pace him out for the rest of the season if I had to. But yeah, it's hard to get away from the fact that it's just going to be much, much harder for him to create offense if he's not getting exposure to Buchnevich and Thomas on the regular at even strength and on the power play. Antonio says, "I have to say, you're one of my new favorite hockey podcasts that I've been subscribed to the past couple of weeks. Appreciate that, Antonio." love to see new people come on and get some value out of it. That's what we do it for. Love to hear that we're helping people out there get to their fantasy hockey championships, and we'll do our best to get you there as well. Dreamsman says, Brady or Matthew, which to chuck for you to take rest of season? I think I'm still taking Matthew. If it's a Bangers Cats league, then the hits for Brady do make it more of a consideration. If it's just straight up points, then 100% Matthew Tkachuk I would take. But yeah, it's kind of a spectrum there between points leagues, points only leagues, and then on the other side of the spectrum, a Bangers Cats. If it was true Bangers Cats with hits and not a ton of point scoring categories, then I think I would go Brady. But otherwise, I would go Matthew. I think in the majority of leagues, I would be going Matthew Tkachuk. Dylan says, so Huberto has been slightly better lately. Do you consider him a hold, or is he streamer level now? So let's take a look at what Huberto has been doing lately. 3 assists in his last 5 games, averaging over 18 minutes a night, 176th in shots per 60, 179th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 55th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 105th in scoring chances, 4 per 60, pacing for 14 goals, 51 points. Overall, I think he's still probably just a streamer for me until I see evidence of something more exciting. Calgary as a team is just not that exciting. They are lacking game breakers. Huberto more of a playmaker than a finisher, as we all know. And yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of uncertainty around this team right now. It's really hard to get excited about anyone. So I do think that Huberto is still in a streamer territory for me at the moment. All right, Kochetkov was requested to talk about here. And honestly, I am interested in whoever's got the net in Carolina, because I do think that that's obviously a place where people are going to win some games. You have Ranta going in the game tonight. It's at the end of the first, and Carolina's up 1-0 currently. And so overall, I do think that Kochetkov appears to be the guy with the most leeway right now. They went right back to him after he allowed 5 goals on 16 shots against the Islanders. They went right back to him, and he got a W against the Sabres for them. Now, Ranta's in this game tonight. We'll see how Ranta does. I still kind of feel like the most likely scenario here, going back years of what the Canes have liked to do, is to do some sort of 1A, 1B situation. And so I think that Kochetkov is clearly in the driver's seat at the moment, and therefore I like him for now. 43% rostered on Yahoo at the moment, but I would not be surprised if Ranta turned it around and supplanted him at some point. So yeah, definitely roster Kochetkov for now. Don't get complacent. Don't think that you've found somebody that you're going to hold for the rest of the season, though. Ricky is, and Mercer put up some decent numbers lately. Dropped to the third line in practice today with Meyer. Is he turning it around, or does his deployment diminish any hope or interest in him? So Mercer is a guy that we talked about a little bit in the podcast yesterday as well. And yeah, it is a player that when he's getting deployment, I'm interested in. When he's not getting deployment, I'm not interested in. So yeah, pretty solidly a streamer level player for me right now. I just don't see how he gets into a top power play situation, which is really how he could elevate himself into like that 60, 65, 70 point territory where you're really getting excited about rostering him and holding on to him even through bad weeks. So I don't think that we're going to see that ceiling for Mercer, even though he does seem, I will say, he does seem to be turning around his play as of late. I think that much is true, but I don't think that in his current situation with the players returning from injury, Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier specifically, that Mercer is really going to be in a spot to produce a ton for fantasy. Basically just a streamer level for me at the moment. GG says, Carberry wants the scrubs and young guns to get more minutes, it looks like. I figured GM would have told him to break the scoring record and screw the little guys, but guess not. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like I said at the beginning, I do think that Ovechkin It's Ovechkin. Like, everything in Washington is tied to Ovechkin, and I do think that that level of gravity is going to come home to roost at some point, and they are going to let Ovechkin do Ovechkin things and chase that record. I think that the entire fan base would just completely revolt if it became more of an ongoing saga where they're not playing him a ton of minutes and letting him go for that record. So in the end, I think that Ovechkin is probably pretty safe. All right. Let's talk about Sam Reinhart. Only 3 goals and 4 points in his last 5 games. Man, the wheels have really fallen off for Sam Reinhart here. On the season, obviously, he's got 29 points in 24 games on a 55-goal, 99-point pace. That's pretty impressive stuff. Curiously, the underlying stats have not been there for Reinhart much this season. Like, he's just 216th in shots per 60, 91st in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. That's okay, but not exceptional. Much better in the on-ice stats, obviously. Florida is a great place to get on-ice stats. 27th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 43rd in scoring chances, 4 per 60. On-ice shooting percentage is not that high, but the IPP is. So he's getting more of a percentage of the goals that are being scored while he's on the ice than he normally does. That's going to regress. But the on-ice shooting percentage could honestly increase from that 11.2% on-ice shooting percentage. The shooting percentage proper, his individual shooting percentage at 26.7%, that's definitely going to come down at some point. So on the whole, I do think that Reinhart is probably a point per game plus player, but definitely not a 99 point player. I could see him hitting 90 this year and kind of sustaining that level from here on out, but I definitely don't think we're talking about a guy who's suddenly going to hit 100 points this year. All right, let's keep rolling. Gabriel Vilardi is back in town. He's got 1 assist in his first 2 games back off a knee injury, averaging just over 14 and a half minutes time on ice. I think that Vilardi is going to be put in some situations to succeed here. He's already on the top power play. He's been playing on a line with Alex Iafallo and Cole Perfetti in this game here tonight. So that's not ideal, obviously. You want the exposure to Scheifele and Connor if you're playing in Winnipeg. And he was there previously, so maybe he will get back there again. Early returns here on the underlying numbers are not good. Down in like the 300, 250 range for all the stats that we like to look at, the rate stats here. So, yeah, it's tough to get excited about what Vilardi's done so far. But I do think that we're talking about a guy who could be put into some interesting situations. The top power play is obviously interesting, but the even strength deployment leaves a little something to be desired currently. So I am optimistic on Vilardi. You can grab him for now and just hope that the even strength situation improves. I just don't know that Vilardi is a guy who's going to move the needle on his own. I don't think he's exhibited that to us so far. I think that he's still a player who needs to be alongside, you know, he needs to be alongside Scheifele. He needs to be alongside Connor for him to really provide something that's exciting to us in fantasy. And so for that reason, I'm not super excited. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Vilardi. I'm feeling like he's a little bit mid as a player, a little bit of a player that you roster when he's getting terrific deployment, and he's more of a streamer level when he's only on the top power play or only on the top line. Vitek Vanacek and the entire New Jersey goaltending situation. So it's been a little tough to figure out exactly what the Devils are going to do with this situation. So we had the back-to-back where Kira Schmid played in both games, played terrific the first night, and then allowed 5 goals on 17 shots to the San Jose Sharks the next night. The Devils play again tomorrow on Tuesday against Vancouver, so we'll see who they go with there. I have to imagine Vanacek gets back in for that one after Schmid not having a great game versus San Jose. I think this is honestly a net where you're going to be a little bit disappointed with everyone from time to time. I'm not sure either of these guys are the long-term answer in New Jersey. So while Vanacek is playing fine, you're going to be interested in having that goaltender on your team because New Jersey obviously can score. That part is definitely there, and still you see it in the 5v5 stats of late. Over the last couple of weeks, the Devils are second in the league in Corsi 4 per 60 and first in the league in scoring chances for percentage per 60. Sorry. Corsi 4 percentage and scoring chances for percentage, I should say. They're right at the top of the league, right there with Carolina in both of those metrics. So it's definitely a terrific environment for a goalie to work within. But the goalies have to actually play decently for that to really come home to rest for us here in fantasy. And so far, it has not been pretty. You've got Vanecek sitting at an 879 save percentage on the season. That's just not going to cut it, right? And you've got Schmid at an 891. So neither of these goalies really doing themselves many favors at the moment. It's really hard to pick a winner at this point, and I'm inclined to think that they're just gonna throw it back and forth between whoever sucks the least at any given moment throughout the season here. All right, Rasmus Anderson, just 2 assists in his last 5 games, 65th in shots per 60, 23rd in shot attempts per 60, and 55th in individual scoring chances for per 60 over the last 5 games, 14th in on ice Corsi 4 per 60, and 33rd in scoring chances for per 60. The interesting thing here in Calgary is that he has been bumped off the power play and bumped off the power play entirely. It's been Noah Hanifin as the top power play defender there, and then Mackenzie Weegar is running the second unit. So Anderson just completely off all power plays. It's been fairly abrupt. He's been kind of consistently their top power play quarterback for much of the last 2 years. So that's a little bit obviously concerning, but I'm not dropping him yet. Hanifin has had a good little run here, and we'll see how long that continues. But Hanifin has never really nailed down that role in the past, and I'm finding it hard to believe that he's going to do so now. I think that eventually they'll probably end up going back to Anderson. It's a guess. It's not based on anything, but I'm not panicked on Anderson yet. I'm not willing to let him go. In a lot of leagues, he blocks. He's on the ice a tremendous amount, over 24 minutes average time on ice for the season. And so he's usually just going to be quite valuable and well worth hanging on to on the season, pacing for 12 goals, 49 points at the moment. And those numbers look pretty sustainable. Obviously, the lack of power play hurts him in the interim, but I'm inclined to think that he gets back there, and I'm willing to wait for a little bit at least to see how the next number of games go for Calgary before I do make any rash decisions over there. So the Flames this week play two of those teams that we just mentioned. At first, they play the Wild on Tuesday, and the Wild have obviously been hot since the new coach came on board, Jay Hines. And then Thursday they play Carolina. Saturday they play the New Jersey Devils. So it's a bit of a murderer's row here for the Flames this week. So we'll see how this week goes. We'll see if Hanifin is able to continue to be productive on the top power play. If he is, then maybe he does lock down a little bit more time, and we'll reconvene next week and have the same discussion, and we'll see how we feel about Rasmus Anderson then. For this week, I'm going to let it play and see how things go. All right, Kyle says Anders Lee is point per game plus in the last 3, still a streamer. Let's take a look at Anders Lee, see what he's been up to under the hood. So yeah, he's got 2 goals, 4 points in his last 5 games, still averaging under 15 minutes average time on ice the last 5 games. That's not great. 104th in shots per 60, 76th in individual scoring chances for per 60. That's, I guess, respectable is what I would say. And then the on-ice number is not great. 225th in Corsi 4 per 60, 245th in scoring chances 4 per 60. And he has been getting up there on the power play. So that part is interesting. Obviously, if he can maintain some top power play work, then that obviously raises his profile. Overall, I just like on the season, he's averaging 15 minutes, and he's at the stage in his career now, I think, where he's definitely not somebody who's doing it himself. He needs people around him to really be able to produce. And it's really hard to produce when you're at this 15 minutes level of deployment. Even if you're on top power play, it's really hard to produce and produce consistently if you're at that level. You can stream him. There's probably going to be better streaming options in any given week, unless the Islanders just have an absolutely tremendous schedule. So overall, I just remain kind of uninterested in Undersley, despite the recent run of production here. All right, Travis Konecny is next up. 1 goal, 2 points in his last 5 games, and still averaging over 20 and a half minutes time on ice. 189th in shots per 60, 79th in individual scoring chances for per 60, 56th in on-ice Corsi for per 60, and 130th in on-ice scoring chances for per 60. On the season now, pacing for 41 goals, but only 58 points is Konecny. 57% IPP, 16.7% shooting percentage, 11.1% on ice shooting percentage. I think the IPP comes up. I think the shooting percentage could come down a little bit. You get that a little bit of that normalization. I think still this is probably a player who's going to be between 65 and 70 points on the season when all is said and done. So I do think that it's going to come back. The deployment is still there. You're not doing anything with Travis Konecny when he's skating 20 plus minutes. Yeah, you would wish that the Flyers would be a better team and he would have more support and he would then be a little bit more consistent with his point gathering. But yeah, quite honestly, I think you're just riding with Travis Konecny till the end of the season. Maybe if he gets on a hot streak here, you might want to unload him just because you'll have some ups and downs, given that it is Philadelphia and it is Tortorella, and he's going to move up and down the lineup from time to time throughout the season. But when everything is said and done, I do expect Travis Konecny will score 30 to 35 goals and be in the 65 to 70 point range. Miro Heiskanen is one that people have been asking about a fair bit. Just 2 assists in his last 5 games, still averaging a little bit under 25 minutes a night. 123rd amongst defensemen in shots per 60, 77th in individual scoring chances for per 60, 50th in both Corsi for per 60 and scoring chances for per 60 is Heiskanen. Just 1 goal in 22 games on the year, crucially for Heiskanen so far, pacing for 4 goals, 52 points. This is a case with Heiskanen where on the season, the on-ice numbers are still just tremendous. It's Dallas. Dallas can absolutely play. They have a second line now that's looking terrific, which is something they didn't have for much of last year. So that actually gives Heiskanen a little bit of even more of a boost at even strength. And overall, I remain relatively unconcerned. I will say that I did think that Heiskanen probably had about the best season he could have had last season. And so I'm wondering if this is a situation where we've kind of already seen the, maybe not the career year, maybe he has another year left in him somewhere where he gets back up to the 73 points that he had last year. But I'm not sure that Heiskanen is a guy that we should expect to be like 65 plus points every single season without a doubt. I do think that he could probably get up to a 60 point pace this year fairly comfortably based on the metrics that we're looking at here and based on the fact that Dallas is going to score and is going to have terrific on ice numbers all the time. But yeah, I just don't know if Heiskanen is truly a 70 plus point defenseman year after year after year like he was last year. So, I think that was reflected in my projections this year. And so I think that's where I'm at with Heiskanen is just moderating expectations. If he has a hot streak and he starts to go off and you want to sell him at that point and say Heiskanen's back, then maybe I'd get behind that. Overall, I think you're just riding it out with Heiskanen because yeah, the team situation there is so good that it could honestly even carry him to another 70 point season, even if he himself doesn't play at the peak level that he did last season the whole time this year. Cole Caulfield, 2 goals, 4 points in his last 5 games, averaging just over 18 minutes a night. 96th in shots per 60, 119th in scoring chances for per 60, 117th in on ice Corsi for per 60, and 156th in on ice scoring chances for per 60. He's on a 24 goal, 65 point pace for the season. 19th in shots per 60 and 12th in shot attempts per 60 on the season. Those are good numbers. Just shooting 8% so far, which is not something that you expect from a Caulfield level shooter. I do think that he's probably got double that in him, quite honestly. So I do think that he's close to, if not a 45 goal scorer, then close to it. As a pace for the rest of the season, obviously it's going to be tough for him to get there given the slow start to the season in the goal scoring column. But yeah, like 40 to 45 goals and the 65 point pace, I kind of believe, to be quite honest, because there's nobody else there. That's really gonna come along with him. I think Caulfield is the one true elite talent that the Canadians have currently. Would not put Suzuki anywhere near that category, but he is obviously their next best player and the player that Caulfield needs to get whatever he can. So I do think that I do think there are better days ahead for Caulfield. He's going to score more goals, which is obviously going to mean more points for us in fantasy. So don't worry about that if you are worried currently. I do think better days are ahead for Caulfield in the goal scoring department. But if you were expecting a breakout to 70 plus points this season, I don't think that's in the cards, just given the current situation in Montreal. Frank Vatrano, just one goal in his last five games. Ugh. Terrible stuff from Frank Vatrano, but still 4 points, averaging 17 and a half minutes time on ice, still eighth in shots per 60 over his last five games. Terrific stuff there. On the season, pacing for 48 goals and 79 points is Frank Vatrano. If you could have predicted that at the start of the season, then yeah, you could have won some money, that's for sure. 181st in Corsi 4 per 60 and 210th in scoring chances 4 per 60 over this last little bit. That's not great. And those numbers have been consistent. That's actually better than his full season on ice numbers so far. 82% IPP is extremely high. The 15.9% shooting percentage is also extremely high for a guy like Vatrano. And then a 12% on ice shooting percentage, also high for Frank Vatrano. I think there's a few things at play here. Vatrano's been tied to Mason McTavish, who is legitimately having a terrific year. Vatrano is too. Under the hood, like things look pretty solid. Vatrano has always been a bit more of a volume shooter than a scoring chance generator. You see it reflected in his total numbers on the season through 24 games, 15th in shots per 60, but 101st in individual scoring chances 4 per 60. That's kind of just who Frank Vatrano is, who he has been historically. And so I think that's likely to continue. But what that usually means is that a guy like Vatrano doesn't shoot at this 15.9% shooting percentage. He does typically have a pretty solid IPP, so despite 82% being too high, it might not regress so far. He's been between 72 and 74% the last 3 years. That's pretty solid. And I think that, yeah, you're talking about, what is that, a 10% reduction, 8 to 10% reduction there. That's not nothing for sure, but it's not cataclysmic by any means. What's more concerning is the on-ice shooting percentage. He's never been a guy with a high on-ice shooting percentage. To some extent, I think that he could sustain a higher on-ice shooting percentage just because he's playing with better players this year. Obviously, McTavish now being injured for the next 2 games. I think this is going to be a really good test for Frank Vatrano. Can he sustain this without McTavish? I believe the lines that I saw had Strome at center, and then I forget if it was Silfverberg on that line. I'm just going to see if I can pull it up for a minute. But regardless, McTavish, being away from McTavish will be a pretty good litmus test for Vatrano in my mind. Can he continue to put up the shots that he's been doing, that he has? And can he continue to put up the points that he has away from McTavish? That's going to be really interesting in my mind. So keep your eyes peeled on Frank Vatrano for this week. For especially at least these 2 games against Colorado and Chicago, where he's not going to have Mason McTavish at even strength, that is going to be the litmus test for Vatrano this week. Connor Ingram here. Ingram, obviously a 0G darling so far in the young season, be that as it may, has completely taken over the net at this point in Arizona. Something we talked about, like at some point you just have to recognize that Vejmelka has not been playing well, and Ingram had absolutely been tearing it up. Vejmelka has an 892 save percentage on the season, and Ingram is at a 925 now. Ingram has played in the last 6 games straight and is slated to start here again tonight on Monday night as I record. So I think that yeah, it's kind of wheels up for Ingram at the moment. I think that he's a good goalie. You heard Kevin Woodley talk about Connor Ingram and thinking that he was legit when he talked with Blake in that podcast that Blake put out. I think that I'm pretty excited about Ingram. I'm never overly excited about any goaltender. I would absolutely drop Connor Ingram if he starts to go cold once again. I'm not thinking that this is necessarily a guy that I'm going to be hanging on to for the rest of the season, but I am happy where I have him and holding until I see, like a really solid, maybe like 3-game stretch where he's really starting to decline, or if Vejmelka is starting to eat back into his starts. Darp Chief says, "Hey Nate, how's it going? If Markstrom is hurt longish term, broken hand, worst case, do you think Wolf or Vladar? Vladar? I've heard a lot of different pronunciations for that name. Do you think either of those would be the pickup?" Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. Everyone wants to say Wolf because obviously he has the huge pedigree. I think it was like back-to-back AHL Goalie of the Year awards for Dustin Wolf. So obviously he's a player that people are excited about, and rightfully so. I think that it would be a tandem. There's almost no way, unless he just absolutely comes in and crushes and starts to turn their season around single-handedly, that Wolf would just demand all of the starts. I'd be interested in either. I'd see how things go in the early going. I think if they do have to call Wolf up, that he would get a run. Like, they're going to want to see what he can do at the NHL level. That would make a lot of sense to me. But I would expect it to be a 50-50 split unless one or the other starts to distance themselves. So maybe grab Wolf if and when the call-up is announced, and you can check out what Wolf does in his first start and kind of go from there. As I mentioned, though, the Flames are playing Minnesota, Carolina, and New Jersey this week. It's going to be a baptism by fire either way. So take that for what it's worth. If you have a spot and you want to get speculative with it, then maybe there is a chance that Wolf absolutely goes off. Usually, I'm just not buying into hype stories like this, especially on teams that have been, just kind of mid. The Flames have not been terrific by anybody's standards over the last little bit. And yeah, I'm just looking now to check out where their 5v5 metrics have been at. They're 20th in the league in Corsi against per 60, and also 20th in the league in scoring chances against per 60 at 5v5 over the last couple of weeks. So it's a slightly below average defensive environment there. It's a look. There's probably still goalies out there that I would prefer in most situations. That being said, if you want to take the run at it, if Wolf gets called up and he's announced as the starter, say here against Minnesota, and you want to take a run at that, and you hear that Markstrom is out for some time, and so you know that there's going to be multiple games coming through, then sure, you can take the run at that. In most cases, like for myself personally, I don't think I'm going to have Wolf anywhere, just because there's just likely going to be other players that I'm going to be more interested in out there. All right. Let's roll back over and talk about Sean Durzi. 0 points in his last five games here, averaging still over 24 minutes a night. So he's still getting all that deployment. 105th in shots per 60, 104th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On ice numbers, pretty solid though. 30th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 48th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. That's not bad. On the season, pacing for 18 goals, 43 points. And on the season, his IPP is 31%, shooting percentage pretty elevated at 11.9%, on ice shooting percentage also pretty elevated at 13.8%. I think that the IPP and on ice shooting percentage probably trend in opposite directions here, and maybe the net effect is a little bit of the same. I don't think that Durzi has super high ceiling. Like 50 points, I think, would probably be my expected ceiling. Durzi has not been a guy to exhibit a high IPP to command a large share of the offense while he's on the ice at any point in his career so far. Maybe he gets there at some point. Maybe this is the year where he gets there. It's just not something we've seen before from Durzi, so it's not something I would expect from him. So if I had to place bets on it at this point, I'm probably putting a ceiling on Durzi at around a 50-point pace from here on out, and putting the floor somewhere at 40. I think he's going to live between 40 and 50 on the season. Perfectly fine player to roster. If you have blocks in your league, he does a ton of that, so that's helpful. But yeah, just not a player that I think has an extremely high ceiling or is likely to have an extremely high ceiling this year. All right, let's talk about Seth Jones. One assist in his last five games here. Still averaging 24 minutes a night. Seth Jones, massive contract, still their best defender by far. He's going to play a ton of minutes. He got back on the top power play. Obviously, the Kevin Korchinski experiment appears to be over. And so, honestly, Jones has been pretty solid. 8th in shots per 60 over the last five games here. 31st in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, doing what he can. 106th in Corsi, 4 per 60. 95th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. Honestly, respectable given what Chicago is. Has not scored a goal yet on the season, Seth Jones, which is pretty remarkable. Just 8 assists, 29-point pace. That's obviously going to come back up for him. 32% IPP, I think he's going to get back up into a 45%-ish range. Obviously, he's going to score some goals there, although Jones is not a major goal scorer by any stretch of the imagination. 9.1% on ice shooting percentage is probably somewhere in the range of where he's going to live on the season on this Chicago Blackhawks team. So overall, yeah, I mean, it was Seth Jones on Chicago. I'm pretty sure that no one was expecting some massive ceiling. I think Jones is a guy that you expect to be in the 40 to 45 point range and is going to provide you with a bunch of peripherals. I think that that's still my assessment. It was my assessment of him preseason. I think he gets back to there as a point pace for the rest of this season. Honestly, though, if, you know, Taylor Hall out for the season now, if the Blackhawks continue to lose players and lose any forward of value not named Connor Bedard, then that will inevitably have some sort of negative effect on Seth Jones. So take that for what it's worth as well. But overall, as a player, I think Seth Jones is exactly who we thought he was. Marco Rossi is the last player on the list here. He has 2 goals, 4 points in his last five games here. Is really starting to come into his own as a player in the league this year. Has been centering the top line with Kaprizov and Zuccarello. Not on the top power play there. The top power play is back to kind of the status quo there. Zuccarello, Joel Eriksson-Ek, Matt Boldy, Kirill Kaprizov, and then Jarrett Spurgeon is quarterbacking it currently. So Rossi, the on-ice number is not terrific, 168th in shots per 60, or sorry, the individual number is not terrific, 168th in shots per 60, 105th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Kind of curiously, the on-ice numbers have been worse, 197th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 221st in scoring chances, 4 per 60. On the season, pacing for 30 goals, 52 points, averaging just over 16 minutes a night. 78% IPP, 17.8% shooting percentage, 9.5% on ice shooting percentage. I think the on ice shooting percentage can come up if he sustains a role on the top line here, but the IPP definitely going to come down. The shooting percentage definitely going to come down. Where that leaves him, yeah, probably around this spot. If you're not on power play one, I think the best you can expect is somewhere around the 50-point mark as a point pace, but probably more in the 20 to 25 goal scoring range for Rossi from this point onward is what I would expect. And so I think that he's a fine streamer. You can hold him through okay weeks for Minnesota, but if there was, Blake and I talk about it all the time on the Waiver Wire show, if there was a week where the Minnesota Wild have just 2 games played that week, then I'm definitely kicking Rossi to the curb for that week and going out and getting myself a streamer. But I do think that he's rosterable in a lot of formats and going to be plenty useful for fantasy for the rest of this season. All right. Well, if you made it this far and you're watching here live, if you could throw a like on this video and click subscribe, that does help us out a lot. We're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. We're at about 600 right now. So obviously we need some help getting there. If you're listening to the podcast and you haven't subscribed on YouTube yet, please go ahead and do that. That would be awesome. It really does help us out. And if you're looking for more of these conversations, you can go on into the Apples and Geos Discord server. Link is in the show description. Check that out. almost 1,000 managers in there talking about fantasy hockey all the time. If you need help with your team, you can check out the Apples and Genos Patreon, where I'm giving advice on all of your questions for a low monthly subscription fee. And I think that that is going to be it for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value and helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for this podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.